things like that happening to them, most certainly. Well, you've been listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. I want to thank you for being with us today, from all you listeners, from all the different websites around the entire Internet. Thanks so much for being with us today. Proud member of the Head On Radio Network, and don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Thanks, gang, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Dead today, four large bomb blasts killed at least 183 people. Hundreds were wounded. The worst attack occurred at a crowded marketplace, which was the site of a massive bombing in February, which killed 137 people. In response, Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki ordered the Iraqi colonel in charge of security in that area to be arrested. Defense Secretary Robert Gates, who is in Israel, responded that the military had expected al-Qaeda terrorists and other insurgents to step up the violence so that the Iraqis would believe that the security plan had failed. In a central Turkish town, three people who worked at a publishing house that distributes Bibles were killed today. This was the latest in a series of attacks against the mostly Muslim country's small Christian minority, estimated to be about 1%. President Bush is threatening tougher economic sanctions against Sudan to end the bloodshed in Darfur. He said, quote, "The world needs to act." The four-year conflict in Darfur has left 200,000 people dead and 2.5 million displaced. Philippine officials say they have found the body thought to be that of a missing American Peace Corps volunteer. It is believed she was murdered as her body was found buried in a shallow grave. Actress and arts advocate Kitty Carlisle Hart has died at the age of 96. Her career included Broadway, opera, television, and film performances. She was in A Night at the Opera, the 1935 classic Marx Brothers movie. You are listening to the Quality News Network.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I'm here to ask you a question. Has one of your friends or relatives sent you a DVD from another country, and you discover that it won't play in your machine? At the Duplication Connection, we can convert any country-coded DVD to play in the U.S. We can also convert your DVDs to play in any country on the planet. Call me at the Duplication Connection at area code 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Don't dread the Fed. Sure, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. Seems like it happens every day around noon. But does that affect your home loan? Not necessarily. Talk to the pros at Gold Coast Financial. They can help you bid your dread of interest rates goodbye. Don't wait another minute. Start living in your dream home while sending your interest rate nightmares packing. Gold Coast Financial. 649-8757. 649-8757. Gold Coast Financial. 831-649-8757.
The nationwide pet food recall has now expanded as a second contaminated ingredient has been identified. Now a rice protein concentrate has been found to also contain the chemical melamine. Earlier, wheat gluten used in pet food was found to be contaminated with the substance, which is used in the manufacture of plastics. Millions of BlackBerry users experienced more than a 10-hour disruption of their service overnight. The Canadian company that provides service to users in North America blamed an overnight outage for the technical problems that caused customers to lose access to their email on their handheld devices. A rush in last-minute electronic tax filing yesterday overloaded the TurboTax and Pro Series servers. The IRS says users will not be penalized for the delays in the electronic tax returns. The IRS is giving taxpayers in the Northeast who were affected by the recent powerful nor'easter storm a one-week extension to file their tax returns. Meanwhile, the IRS commissioner has been chosen by the American Red Cross to be its new president. And a national survey finds that people who have jobs that involve helping or serving other people are the most satisfied with their work. Light sweet crude is trading at $63.13 a barrel. And near the close of trading today, the Dow Jones in record territory, up 26 points, while the NASDAQ is down 7. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Ali Dramoff.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Yesterday we talked about the stock market and its fall and the plight of the very rich, the CEOs and those that are earning in the top 1% of American incomes. Today I want to talk about the other end of the spectrum, the very poor. Who are the people in poverty? Where do they come from? What makes them poor? Where do they live? What areas of the country are they in? Do they suffer from diseases? Are they on drugs? Are they homeless? There's a lot to talk about, and a lot of people don't want to focus on the very poor, and yet they are in many ways the backbone of our country. My guest today is Avis Jones DeWeaver. She's the Director of Poverty Education and Social Justice Programs for the Institute for Women's Policy Research, and she's going to help me answer these questions. Ms. Jones DeWeaver, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thanks for having me.
The president today, Ms. Jones DeWeaver, is down in the Gulf Coast in Mississippi and in New Orleans to talk about still how we haven't come back after Katrina a year and a half later. Is this just a photo opportunity, or are the president's policies making a difference in the poor?
Unfortunately, I would characterize it as a photo op. When you look at where the rubber meets the road, this administration has been sorely lacking with regards to living up to the responsibility of providing an opportunity for people to be able to work their way up and out of poverty. It's particularly a tragic event when you consider what's going on in the Gulf Coast, because after Katrina, President Bush made a trip down to New Orleans where he specifically said we have a duty to confront this poverty with bold action. But since then, he's submitted one budget after another that specifically seeks to cut billions of dollars away from programs specifically meant to address the poorest of America's poor, and hasn't really done anything to address their specific issues.
Let's talk about who the poor are. I mean, how do you define poverty in America? How many people are in poverty, and has it grown or decreased over recent years?
Well, the way we define poverty in America is a little controversial. We have several different thresholds depending upon the size of your family. So in 2005, for example, for a family of four, you're considered poor if you're making a little under $20,000 per year. For four people. That's for a family of four.
That's hard to feed a family of four with $20,000, I would
think. Of course. It's almost impossible. And then if you look at how many people are poor nationwide, it's roughly 37 million people who are poor.
But so that's more than 10% of America.
Yes, definitely. And it's been growing since 2000. It's been growing every year since 2000, with the exception of 2005, where it finally leveled off. But perhaps even more disturbing, we've been seeing a huge growth in the number of people who live in dire poverty. That's the number of people who make less than half of the poverty line. So in that case, you would consider a family of four making only about $9,900 a year as being in dire poverty. And we found that that number of people is roughly around 16 million people. So we have a lot of people out there who are just barely making it.
Now, when you say a family of four, are these often one wage earner families or two? Is it often, is it a woman and three children, or is it a woman and a man and then two kids?
It could be either way. We defined it as either the specific number that I gave you was referring to a two-parent family with two children. But we also have numbers that refer to one mother and three children, and it's not really that much more. So we're talking about people who are barely making it by. If you look at
now, you said it's gone up since 2000. Now, of course, all our population goes up. America just hit the 300 million mark a few years ago. Is it growing as a percentage of the American population?
Yes, definitely. Poverty has been rising since 2000. Interestingly enough, if you look at it over a more longer term, when we looked at the late 1990s, we saw that poverty was actually going down as the economy was improving. And then when we had our recession in 2000 and 2001, we saw that everything start ticking back up. And even though we've supposedly been in a recovery since 2001, poverty hasn't gone in an opposite direction. So it's still increasing, even though we're supposed to be in an economic recovery.
Now, of course, there are two recoveries over the last 20 years. There's what we might call the Clinton recovery in the late 90s, and what we might call the Bush recovery over the last 5-6 years. And as you point out, poor people did better in the Clinton recovery than the Bush recovery. Why is that?
I think that has a lot to do with what our priorities are on the national level. This current administration seems to have a almost laser-like focus on providing benefits to the most wealthiest citizens through tax cuts and paying for that by gutting programs that are meant to aid the poor. So, for example, things like Medicaid, housing assistance, child care assistance, even food assistance programs have all fell victim to the budget acts. So it's making it that much more difficult for people to get by.
Now, have these programs actually, gone down in funding? I mean, we've been increasing money for Iraq and for Exxon and Mobil and tobacco companies, all friends of the administration. Has money for the poor decreased or just not increased as much as in prior years?
Depending upon the program, one could argue that both has taken place. On some programs such as child care assistance, for example, they've frozen the level of funding, but since more and more people are becoming poor every year, there's a greater need. So that means that there's less money there to reach out to the widening number of people who could take advantage of the program if the money was there to supplement their existence. On the other hand, there are other programs that have been gutted altogether, like specific job training programs, or drastically reduced. So in both directions, we've gone down the wrong path, I would argue.
So now, who are the poor people of America? Where do they live? They live in our cities, they live in our suburbs, they live in rural areas. Where are they located, and what leads someone? I mean, I don't think anyone is poor by choice, but are most of these people, where do they come from? Are they born into poverty and stay in poverty? Are they people who've lost their jobs? How does someone become in dire straits like this?
You know, that's an excellent question, and I think counter to most people's stereotypes, the poor are everywhere. They're not just in urban areas, although we don't oftentimes see a great deal of concentrated poverty in urban areas. But a lot of the poor live in suburbs. A lot of the poor live in rural areas. They are everywhere where you are and where we are as Americans. The poor are America. It's just that in some instances they're more visible than they are in other instances. There seems to be a higher concentration of poor people in the South, a particularly high concentration of poor people around the border states, and I'd say in the West, particularly a lot of immigrants, for example. Also, there's been a great rise in poverty among those who live in the Midwest in recent years. So they are just about everywhere where we are. They are America.
And how do people end up poor? I mean, I can think of three possibilities. Maybe you can name some more. One is you're born into poverty and you never really leave it. One would be someone who's born in, an okay status, maybe middle class status, and something happens, a disease or a job loss or something that makes them poor. And then the third example I was thinking of, as you mentioned, the border states, would be people who cross the border who were poor in Mexico or other countries and seek to do better in the United States. How am I with those categories, and are there others?
You're right on the mark there. I would say that there are some segments of the poor that one could argue have been poor intergenerationally, where there are families that have a long lineage of living in poverty. And oftentimes those are stuck in very persistent situations, urban poor, deep South poor, and just never been able to move their way out.
Why don't we start with them, and then we'll go on to the other groups.
Sure.
What explains this cycle of poverty? Is it bad education? Is it bad life choices? Bad government programs? What is it?
I think it's a lot of things. I think one of the reasons is an outgrowth of intergenerational lack of responsibility in terms of providing great access and equal access to a quality education in America. I think we need to really recognize the fact that we still do have in America two very separate, two very unequal schooling systems. And how can one expect a child to really be able to excel in school if one's parent is barely reading at a third or fourth grade reading level? So those sorts of situations create cycles, I think, that are self-perpetuating, when it's very, very difficult to pull children out of situations where they can't come home and expect to get the support that many families take for granted in terms of supplementing their children's educational experience.
There's so much to talk about, folks. This is a very broad topic, and I know you want to get your input in. If you have a question or a comment for Ms. Avis Jones-DeWeaver, please don't hesitate to call in. The toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON or 888-488-MARK. Either way, we're glad to hear from you. We'll be right back discussing poverty and all its implications. We'll be right back after this.
the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Obviously need to address the issue of the Saddam Hussein execution. Have seen the video that was taken on a cell phone, or have read about the circumstances surrounding the execution. It's pretty evident that the absolutely worst thing that could have happened with the carrying out of the sentence after the long trial of Saddam Hussein happened. And if we had sat down and made a list and said, all right, here's a list of six or seven different things that could happen, what would be the very, very worst thing that could happen, not only for us, for the United States, but for the world and for the Iraqis themselves? And it seems to me that if not first, then definitely second would have been what indeed did happen.
The Dr. Bill O'Brien Show, Tuesday to Thursday, noon to 2 Eastern, here on the Head On Radio Network.
Did you know the University of Nebraska is a leader in the landscape of computer science and business education? Our J.D. Edwards Honors Program combines business strategy with next-generation computer software. That's how you teach leaders for the 21st century. I'd call that thinking outside the box. There is no place like Nebraska. The University of Nebraska, Lincoln. Did you know the University of Nebraska is a virtual world leader in the field of distance education? And that they bring highly interactive learning right into the homes of students in all 93 Nebraska counties, all 50 states, and 135 countries around the world using the latest computer website technology? I guess the lesson here is, no matter where you live, there's no place like Nebraska. The University of Nebraska, Lincoln.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. The topic today is poverty. We're going to discuss really all the ins and outs. Who are the poor in America? What makes them that way? And how can we help break the cycle of poverty? My guest is Avis Jones DeWeaver. She's a PhD, has a doctorate. She's the director of poverty education and social justice programs for the Institute for Women's Policy Research. Ms. Jones DeWeaver, before the break, we were talking about the most persistent cases, maybe the most difficult cases, and that's people who it seems are in generations of poverty. Their parents were poor, their grandparents were poor, and it just seems to go generation after generation. Many people thought that welfare reform was supposed to be addressed to this group of people. What is going on with this hardcore poor people, if you will, and how can we break the back of this cycle?
You know, it's really quite difficult, and I'm glad you brought up this issue of welfare reform, because I think that ties into why we're seeing these startling numbers with regards to the rise in the number of people who are in dire poverty today. 10 years ago, when we passed welfare reform, we said that we are only going to give you 5 years of cash assistance out of your entire lifetime. So during this time that you're on welfare, we're going to make sure that we can push you into a job so that you can become self-sufficient. That was the goals of welfare reform. As it has played out, welfare reform, one could argue, was quite successful in getting people from welfare to work, because roles have dropped by about 60%. The problem then becomes, what types of jobs are people able to get? And what we found is that overall, people have gotten very low-wage, insecure jobs that don't offer benefits, don't offer a lot in terms of stability. And so people have been cycling on and off of work and living on the fringes. And so that's why today I think we are finding a situation where there's a huge increase in the number of people who are living in dire poverty, many of whom are in fact working, but just not making it enough to make ends meet and having to then rely on other forms of assistance like food stamps and Medicaid just to be able to piece together enough assistance to be able to get by.
Ms. Jones-Weaver, I wonder if you can give us some statistics. I'm curious to know what percentage of people in poverty and in dire poverty, as you've defined it, are actually working part-time or full-time, have a job.
It's been estimated that about half of those who are in poverty are working at least part of the time. Now, a lot of those who aren't working can't work. We have a number of people in America who are disabled or who have other problems that we might consider very persistent problems that make it difficult for them to hold down a job, such as substance abuse, such as some sort of mental illness, but maybe are having difficulty qualifying for Social Security or disability insurance, or maybe they're taking on the responsibility of taking care of a child or a parent who is disabled or has some sort of problem that's prohibiting them from being able to go out in the workforce themselves. So all of those, there are situations where, which I think we all would agree that it's legitimate for someone not to have a job. And then there are some people who, for some whatever reason, are not finding consistent employment. I think one of the problems that many economists speak point